No.
Why he hasn't come home. Poor Ed. 17 years down that sewer, and this is how they treat him.
Trixie, how did you find out about it?
One of the fellas from the sewer called to console him. Oh, I wish he was here. I hope he's all right.
Oh, now take it easy, Trix. Ed's all right.
Oh. Yeah, he's okay. As a matter of fact, he just went across the street to get you some flowers.
Flowers? Yes, he was worried about how you were going to take the news.
Worried about me? But I was worried about him. He's had his heart set on being made foreman.
Oh, poor Ed.
Who'd have thought this could happen? Oh, it must have been a terrible shock to him. Ed, darling!
Trixie.
Oh, honey. Listen, don't be discouraged. The worst thing that sewer ever did was letting you go.
You know?
Oh, sure, but honey, everything is going to be all right. You're going to get a better job, a much, much better job. I have faith in you.
Trixie, you're a wonderful woman.
Oh,
you sure you're not angry for me losing my job or anything?
No, of course not.
You're positive?
Positive.
You can take the man out of the sewer, but you can't take the sewer out of the man.
Jackie Gleason. The Honeymooners. With the stars Art Carney, Audrey Meadows, and Joyce Randolph.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. So the original 39 episodes of classic Emmy Award-winning television series The Honeymooners turns 60 years old. Originally a recurring sketch on Jackie Gleason's live variety show, The Honeymooners aired as film productions in 1955 and 56. And while only 39 episodes were shot, the characters were brought back for Gleason's 60s variety show, making a run on American television screens through the 1970s and to this day, continuing in syndication. All with the stars Jackie Gleason, Art Carney, Audrey Meadows, and our guest who played the wife of Ralph's best friend, Norton, Trixie Norton. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Joyce Randolph. Joyce, welcome to the program.
Hello, dear. How nice to be here with you.
Oh, we are so excited to have you on the program. I can't express how excited I am to have the opportunity to spend some time with you. You are a television legend who was on one of the most successful sitcoms in the history of the medium.
Well, that's what they say, and we did it.
You did do it. You are a Midwest girl. You grew up in Detroit.
In Detroit, yes.
Yeah. You dipped into acting in school. I know you were in school plays, many as the lead.
Oh, yes.
You know,
I had to do that.
You had to do that. That's how you got started. And, you know, at a pretty young age, you knew you wanted to be an actress.
I have recently had a letter from a lady who knew my grandmother way up in northern Michigan. She said that when we were all visiting there one summer, then she talked to me and that I was very young, and I said, I'm going to be an actress. Now, I don't remember that at all, but she tells me this, so maybe it's true.
Maybe it is true. Well, not only that, but I think you knew also at some point you wanted to also be in New York.
Yes, I knew that I couldn't do this in Detroit. I had to be in New York.
Now, second or third grade, you performed as Mother Goose. All right, so that was your debut role right there. You grew up with the movies, but you also grew up with radio. What were some of the movies and radio programs back in the day that influenced you back then that said, boy, these are really great shows. I want to be a part of this.
Oh, dear. I don't know. On the radio? Well, we listened to things on the radio, of course. But never thought of being a radio actress, though. No, I just always knew it had to be stage. I love the movies, went to the movies a lot. Even now, I look at Turner Classic Movies, I look at all the old movies. I don't know, I just love all the old stars and the old movies, and I don't care for today's new movies.
I hear you. No, I hear you. There's you know, the movies that were made way back when in the 30s, the 40s, and 50s, there are classics that can never be remade. I mean, you know, they try to sometimes, but some of these with the classic actors, the writing, the directing, is pretty incredible to watch even today.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. At 16, you went to the Expression School of Speech and Drama in Detroit. Now, that was a school outside of high school, correct?
Yes, I think it was Tuesday nights and Friday nights. Mm-hmm. And I would travel all the way downtown on the bus, and it made my parents nervous, but I just had to do this, you know.
Sure. Were your parents pretty supportive of you wanting to do this and take on this?
My mother was, but my father didn't care for it, no.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, some people, you know, they say, you know, this business, which is totally true, you take a chance getting mm-hmm. into it to begin with. And especially when you get started, you got to take on other jobs. I believe you auditioned for the Wayne Civic Workshop in Detroit, which was a prestigious group mm-hmm. of dramatic actors and actresses at the time.
Yes, and they took me in as their youngest member. Mm-hmm.
And there was a production of Stage Door that came to Detroit. You got a part, and that was a big deal. That was really your first major.
Yes, it was a wonderful break, and that came through the Catholic Actors Guild in Detroit. That was the other big group. But the head of that group had seen me in, what did I do, The Voice of The Importance of Being Earnest. And he had said he had seen me in that, so would I go in with his girls from the Catholic Theater and audition for Stage Door when Arthur Jarrett came to town. And I did that, and I was cast as a Boston Society girl, and then we went into rehearsal when the rest of the cast got here from New York. You know, the producers couldn't afford to hire all those young actresses and send them to Detroit from New York, so they hired Detroit girls, and we were just fine.
Which made sense, but that also puts you on the road, too. You did 6 weeks in Detroit doing Stage Door, and then you went on tour. And
well, yes, it was so successful that they decided to go to Chicago.
Here.
Well, the Chicago critics are a little, or maybe much more critical
than Detroit. Yeah.
Than the Detroit ones, and we really just had 2 weeks there. And so we went back to Detroit, and one of the other girls, Marie, what the hell was her name, Marie Fritzley, and I told our parents we're going to New York, The character man in the show, Bobby Bernard, he was a sweet man. He had a sister in Detroit. He says, I'll go back to Detroit, see my sister for a few days. You two girls tell your parents you're going to New York. He said, I will escort you. And he did. He was just darling. He escorted us on the overnight train, sitting up. Cool. We got to New York, and there it was, you know, all its glory.
Wow. Yeah, the trains back then, too. Yeah, you're right. There was no really, you know, sleeping cars at the time that were cost-effective. So, I mean, you were pretty much sitting up the entire time.
I think it was 1875 for the ticket.
Oh, was that right? That's awesome. Now, that was in 1943. When you got to New York, what was your first big break?
Well, I learned to make rounds through other girls, and it was just a few weeks later. I was walking down 44th Street or whatever, and ran into Mr. McCoy, who had produced Stage Door. And he said, hey, kid, you want to go back to Detroit? And I said, oh, what do you mean, Mr. McCoy? He said, I'm sending out a touring revival of AB's Irish Rose, and you can be the understudy to Rosemary, and you have to help the stage manager. And in the wedding scene, you have to be the matron of honor. And in every city, we'll find three other girls to be bridesmaids. And you have to teach the bridesmaids what to do in each city. And all of this for a very small amount of money. But it didn't matter. I think I got my card. No, I already had my card. But, I mean, I got a job. So that was great. And I went on tour with that for a whole year.
And you did that as well. And then when you were back in New York, and you did a lot of touring around the country at that time, but
yeah, there was more of that going on. Mm-hmm.
But you did make ends meet. I mean, you did what every actress does, Broadway actress does, and you worked at Saks Fifth Avenue, I think, for a little while.
No, it wasn't that glamorous. It was another store. I can't think of it. Learners, I think it was Learners.
It was Learners. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So it was the Learners. Now, you got to work when you were on stage with some of the greats. You worked with Gloria Swanson. Tell me what that was like.
Oh, that was wild.
I bet.
She was very nervous, you know, to be on Broadway. She was a huge motion picture star,
right.
But she wasn't that known on Broadway. And, everybody knew her, but, I mean, she was very nervous. And the show was very good. It was called, what was it called? A Goose for the Gander.
Okay.
Very cute play written by Harold J. Kennedy. Also directed by Harold, and he played one of the leads. which was probably a bit of a mistake because the critics were just waiting for him. He had not been a popular man in New York City. And they really ripped the play apart because of Harold J. Kennedy. It was really a very cute show. It went on for years in summer stock with various leading ladies, elderly, you know, not elderly, but, you know, over the hump leading ladies, taking it on tour in summer stock, did very well. But he killed us on, you know, the critics killed us on Broadway, which was too bad.
Now, but you did.
Gloria was okay. She was very nervous and not overly friendly. And I played the maid, and she said, that girl is too young, put glasses on her or something.
to make you look older. That's nice. That's nice. Because you do hear, you know, back in the day, there were some stars out there that wanted you to shine, and they wanted to see, you know, they were just as much as interested in the people around them than themselves. And then there was people like Gloria Swanson, who was kind of in it for herself.
Yeah, she was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, at that point, you went out to Hollywood in 1946, 1947.
1946, 1947. I guess I was out there 14 months. I did not like it that much.
Yeah.
And I said, got to get back to New York, back into television.
Well, there's something.
I had already done a little television, you know, before then.
Yeah, you wanted to move back because, I mean, there's a sense of reality in New York. There's nothing like the stage and the Broadway scene in New York, and things are just run a little differently. It was a little too glamorous, a little bit over the top in L.A. Now, you did, as you mentioned, many early television shows. There was a drama you did, I think, for General Electric. It was on WRGB. That was one of your first shows that you did.
Was that summer? What the heck was the name of that? Yes.
Yeah, you did a lot of drama back then, but you also did a lot of detective shows, and there was a lot of...
Yes, there were so many of them at the time, and I was always doing famous jury trials and Martin Caine, and you did all those detective shows. It was wonderful, yeah.
Well, we are talking to a television legend, Joyce Randolph, the only surviving cast member of classic television series The Honeymooners, and when we come back, we'll talk about how she landed the role of Trixie, life on the set, and so much more. Next on 720 WGN.
Hey, Ralph?
What?
Mind if I smoke?
I don't care if you burn.
It's Dave Player on 720 WGN. We're talking to Joyce Randolph, who played Trixie on one of the most classic television series of all time, The Honeymooners. Coming from such a rich theater experience, it must have been familiar territory when you did live television in the early 1950s.
Yes, it wasn't too hard to do that. It was easy. I thought, you know, you'd change clothes behind the set because you only had about a minute.
Right.
And you didn't care who saw anything. And it was very hectic, but very good. And we loved it.
Yeah, you know, but at that time, because television was so new, people from the movies, people from the stage didn't look, you know, a lot of people didn't look up to television. They looked at it as like a step down. But those who embraced it really went somewhere with it.
Yeah, that's true, but it was looked down upon. You're right. Mm-hmm.
Now, how would you describe live television at the time when you were doing these shows? What was the experience like? It must have felt like Broadway, but I mean, I would think there was a lot of chaos and running around because it was a new medium to begin with. And then
yes, it was all new, and it was different from the stage, and we sort of loved being in something new. Yeah, there was some very experimental stuff very early on. I think General Motors did it, or General Electric, and you had to wear, like, blue lipstick, and the lights were so bright, it was terrible. And then the lights got better, and you didn't have to wear blue lipstick, but it was fun to do that very early stuff.
You know, it's funny, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, but, you know, Studio 50, which is the Ed Sullivan Theater where Letterman did his shows, you know, he kept the air conditioning blowing pretty cold because the lights get so hot. Especially,
he wanted it cold, I guess.
Yeah, in these older studios, so that's something for that. Now, you were on the Colgate Comedy Hour, then in 1951, you did a Clorets commercial, which you almost didn't get because you were too tall for the person that was playing opposite of you, the gentleman that was playing opposite of you, so you wore flats. to do the spot, but you got it. And the Clorets commercial was a big deal for many reasons, but it got you discovered by the great Jackie Gleason. Tell me a little bit about how that happened.
Yeah, well, I got the Clorets commercial wearing flats, and then Joe Cates was the casting guy. This was still way back at
Dumont.
Channel 5, yeah. Dumont. And he called up and said, "We're going to repeat that Clorets commercial, so come in again." And I did, and we repeated it. And then a few weeks later, Joe Gates is on the phone again, and he said, could you come in and audition and try to look older? He said, "Jackie has written a strange little skit with the writers. Jackie mostly wrote it, and you're going to audition a few women, so you come in too." And I did, and Jackie asked me to do it. I guess I did it, and you know, with like one rehearsal, thank God I was able to do that with one rehearsal, and he evidently liked it, and it just sat there that night on television. Nobody knew what this was, with this strange little skit with excuse me, Gleason playing a sort of old vaudevillian who came back to his hometown and talked to the woman he should have married long ago, which was me.
Okay.
And then a few weeks later, Joe Cates called up and he said, "Oh, have you seen this thing we've been doing?" Excuse me, called The Honeymooners. And I said, "No, my roommate Diana and I, we don't even have a television set."
Yeah, you worked on television, early television, but you never saw yourself really on television. Yeah, it's funny. That's how it was back then.
So he said, "Well, you know, it's Art Carney is the sewer worker, but Jackie Gleason is the bus driver, and at that time, Pert Kelton was Alice, the wife." And he said, Jackie said, "Get me that serious actress for Trixie." That's all he knew, serious actress, didn't know my name or anything, but he put me in it that way. It's not good to fall into something that way. I mean, it's wonderful, yet you don't have any agent representing you. You never get any money. You
know? Right. And this was, by the way, this was on the Dumont Television Network on the Cavalcade of Stars at one point.
Yes, what it was. It was on Jackie Gleason's Cavalcade of Stars.
From your perspective, tell us about the role of Trixie. What did they want you to do on the onset of these first episodes?
They just gave me the script and you said the words. Nobody told me what to do. You played it the way you wanted to play it, that's all. And it seemed to satisfy them, you know. I was really, in a way, playing myself, which is stupid, but that's the way it was. Yeah. And it worked out okay.
Yeah. Well, and plus it was a story, you know, TV movies always kind of glamorized life quite a bit. And this was not that. This was the lower side of growing up in New York. How were the Cramdons, okay, different from the Nortons on this show? How did you see them two differently?
Well, they were all very poor in Brooklyn. Yeah. But Jackie was all Mr. Cramden was always losing money, whereas Art Carney somehow seemed to make money, and our apartment was much better looking than theirs.
Yes, it was.
Everybody commented on, which was really kind of silly that ours could be that much better looking, but it was.
It was comparatively. I mean,
Jackie wanted his to be very plain, very poor looking. Evidently, he had grown up very poor in Brooklyn, and he wanted it that way.
It was a reflection of life.
Yeah.
For him. Yeah. People used to send curtains and other household items to CBS so that the Cramdons could
have them to some hospital.
Yeah. Is that what happened? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, with all the items that you sent. What was it like? And I know this is a long answer. So what was it like working with Jackie? You know, I know he was in control of everything from what I've heard. He didn't rehearse that much. What was life like working with Jackie Gleason?
Well, a little difficult because he wasn't overly friendly, you know. He could be very nice, but he could also be a little bit mean if he wanted to and give orders. But he wanted things his way, and things were done his way. And he just wasn't going to rehearse much because he said it's not funny if it's over-rehearsed. It's got to be fresh and spontaneous. And he was right. He was right. With us, it worked. So we didn't have long rehearsal schedules at all, like people on the most Sid Caesar show over on NBC. We were on CBS. They were NBC. And they worked all week to put their show on. And, you know, our June Taylor dancers worked all week, yes, but the skits didn't. And that's the way it was. That's the way he wanted it. He was a slightly a difficult man. Not, you know, I didn't want to be overly friendly with him, so it was fine.
Well, and you know, when we're talking about watching the series today, you can see that there's anticipation from the actors, from all four of you on the set, because there's also a little ad-libbing that goes on in these shows as well.
Yes.
You know, so I could see you're all kind of anticipating, like, okay, what's coming next, and am I going to do my line, or do I need to do something else? You could see it, that it was, like, alive.
Well, I hope you couldn't see it too much.
But in a good way. In a good way, yeah, yeah.
But Audrey was a brilliant girl. She knew every word in the script. She knew everybody's lines, particularly Jackie's. She knew she had to, you know, and she was wonderful.
Yeah, I was going to say, there was a way that Audrey would cue Jackie and others when if they missed their cue or missed their line, or she'd look over to an area where, you know, if Jackie was supposed to walk over to the fridge, she'd look over to the fridge to kind of give him a clue of where he was going.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of was a little bit of an associate director on the set because she had to keep
in a
things
way,
focused.
Yes.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But she, again, you mentioned, wasn't the original Mrs. Cramden. Pert Kelton played that role.
Pert Kelton, yes, did it when we were way back at, you know, Channel 5, Dumont. She was wonderful and really very authentic Brooklyn, with a really authentic accent and everything. And but then CBS bought us, and CBS said, that lady is not going to work on CBS. She's listed in red channels. And that was a crazy thing in those days, assuming that people in red channels were communists.
Communist, yeah.
And, you know, it was a bad time.
They accused Lucille Ball at one point of being a communist.
Yes,
yeah.
I know. It was really a terrible thing to be happening. And so Pert could not come along with us, no, and he was upset. He had to quickly look for somebody. He didn't like to audition at all, but he did find Audrey very quickly, and luckily she turned out to be wonderful. And so that was what happened. And then Pert...
She almost didn't get the role either, because I've heard stories that she came in looking too nice, and Jackie said, no, she's not. She needs to look rougher.
She had to make herself look funny and rough, and then have pictures taken in that state. And when he saw the pictures, he said, oh, this girl will be great. And they said, well, you already met her. He said, no, this will be good. Well, this girl will be fine.
That's funny. That sort of tricked him,
and then it worked out very
well. It did. Tell me about Art Carney working with Art as Ed Norton.
Oh, a very sweet man, so talented. He could do anything, and very shy and quiet. Nothing. He was nothing like Ed Norton, but he could play Ed Norton beautifully, and he was just a wonderful, nice guy.
Yeah.
And you know, when we don't have rehearsals, you don't get to know these people. You don't go to lunch with them. You don't get to know them. It was sad in a way, you know.
Well, there's much more with Joyce Randolph and the 60th anniversary of The Honeymooners, next on 720 WGN.
Well, whoever said the age of chivalry is dead was right. And I know the two guys that killed it. Oh, Alice, our campaign has been a complete flop. On the way to the bus, they walked 20 feet ahead of us, and they only talked to each other. And if that isn't bad enough, on the bus there are just two empty seats. And who sits in those two empty seats? Frau.
It's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN, and we're talking to Joyce Randolph on the 60th anniversary of the original 39 episodes of The Honeymooners. Yeah, you said back then you really just came in, did your job. There wasn't a lot of social interaction before, after, during. It was a job.
Yeah, it was a job. You went home at 9 o'clock Saturday night, yeah.
Now, Jackie, you know, put his variety show, the Jackie Gleason Show, on hold and just focused on The Honeymooners for one season, 39 episodes. So you were doing two episodes a week?
At one point we did, yes.
Oh.
We did Tuesday night and Friday night.
Wow.
And we were in a different theater. We weren't in what they now call the Ed Sullivan Theater. No, we were a few blocks away at an old house, nice, but it did get torn down.
The Adelphi?
Yes, the Adelphi. And Yeah, so we were over there doing that, and we did those 39. But there are more shows. There are lost episodes because we went back the next season, and we were back at CBS Studio 50. Yeah. We were back there doing the show. And those are on Kinescope. And many years later, Jackie, who owned those Kinescopes, spent a lot of money to have them made into half-hour shows. And they're on television sometimes. They're the lot called the lost episodes.
Yeah, brilliant.
When they show one of those, they have to pay me. So they don't do it very often. They stick with those 39 over and over. But there are plenty of wonderful lost episodes.
So when that was negotiated back in the 80s, you know, so, and this is true, in the 1950s, you didn't have those type of contracts because you never thought these would be in syndication and last another 40, 50 years.
Yeah,
so then you got your chance to say, well, wait a second, unless you're going to cut out every scene with Trixie, I need to be paid for this like everybody else.
I need to have a little money now, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, those were Kinescope, as you mentioned, which was a little rougher technology to tape them and show them again. But Jackie
spent money with this, what's this man's name, who could do that, and they got it all fixed up.
Yeah, they look great. But the original 39, even though they were done with something called the Dumont Electronicam system.
Yes, we were the only ones who used that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but here's something I didn't know until recently, is the episodes, which look like they're very much taped, those were live shows.
We always worked live. He never would work on tape. We were always, always live. Mm-hmm.
Which surprised me, because the quality is that of an I Love Lucy episode, a Dick Van Dyke Show episode. It looks like it's completely edited, and it took, you know, a couple weeks to put together. It surprised me that you were all live all the time.
Yep. Always live.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, there was single sponsors at the time of the entire program, and I believe Buick was a sponsor, and Buick wanted another season of The Honeymooners as a single up, and Jackie said, you know, I don't think we can top this.
Yeah, he said, our writers can't think of any more stories.
It's amazing.
They were already plagiarizing themselves.
Yeah. I mean, there was stories, obviously. He did skits and so forth afterwards, but he just felt as a single standing series.
No, couldn't do it again.
What was like life on the set like? I mean, this was really, you know, I've seen pictures of behind the scenes. It was a stage. It was a curtain. It was mostly focused on the Cramden's apartment. What was the time on the set like between takes, working with everybody on the set?
Well, there were no takes because we were absolutely live.
That's right.
We were absolutely live, and you just rehearsed it quickly, and Jackie would disappear into his dressing room. We'd all run up to Audrey's dressing room, and her manager, Val, would read in Jackie's words, and we'd go over and over what we were going to do that night at 8 o'clock, because we had to, you know. He wasn't going to do it with us, but evidently he worked in his room, and we were all together, and we got it on at 8 o'clock.
Now, this is now 60 years ago we're talking about here, so do you remember, when you watch any of these shows today, do you remember actually doing these shows live? Do you remember the moment that you were on the set doing these, or is it just such a distant memory?
Sort of. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
It's kind of strange.
Yeah. I bet, like an out-of-body kind of thing, watching yourself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned there's a lot of ad-libbing on the set. I heard...
Not a lot. A little.
But you mentioned the roller skating episode, which was...
We didn't know what was going to happen, because he never would put on any roller skates. He just put them on that night and went on and did it. And we didn't know how it was going to work out, but it was okay.
So you just kind of flew by the seat of your pants.
Yeah.
Did you have any favorite episodes, now that, you know, it's been all this time and you've watched these a million times? Is there any favorites of yours?
Well, anyone in which I had more than five lines, I began to like that one. Sure, I was there for quite a while.
I bet. Over 100 sketches were made also with the 39 episodes, and that's what amazed me. Now, he moved to Florida. At some point, he said, I'm going to move to Florida. But he replaced you and Audrey. And part of it was, you know, did he want to just freshen things up? I know you wanted to stay in New York, so you weren't going to move to Florida anyway.
No way.
No, but it's funny how, you know, all of a sudden there was just a whole new group. It's, you know, and I know they're out in DVD, and I remember watching some of them when they were a kid. It just wasn't the same.
No, they're not very good, and even in college, it was too nice. You know what I mean? It made them look rich and old, and that's not what the Honeymooners were. They were poor, you know, and young, and
right.
It was all wrong. But it ran a number of seasons. Amazing,
it did.
And Sheila McRae and Jane Keane. Jane was an old, longtime friend of his and put her in as Trixie, which didn't bother me in the least. I was happy with a husband and a baby, you know. And Sheila McRae, she wasn't as good as Audrey. She just wasn't, you know.
Yeah.
And Audrey, I hear Jackie had to work with her, and he hated working with anybody.
That's great. Yeah, and she, and Jack, Audrey did come back for a couple of those.
Yeah. She was friend with Jackie, and he brought her in to do a few things. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now you went back to theater, your first love. You became a mom, so I mean, you took a different turn in your career.
I was busy being a mom. Yeah. Did some summer stock, you know, some musical stock, and it was fine. My husband was doing better and better. I didn't have to work anyhow.
Now, tell me about the Lambs Club. You've talked about that in interviews before. You've been a member for years.
Forever, yeah. Yes. It's the oldest theatrical club in America, but it was more or less founded in London 150 years ago, and actors then were considered to be ruffians, and they were not welcome in places, but they were welcome in Charles and Mary Lamb's home. And they enjoyed that. And then things happened, and they would emigrate to New York because theaters were on 14th Street then, and it was becoming more and more popular. And theaters moved to 23rd Street, and more actors came over. And they were tired of meeting in the back rooms of bars and everything. And they said, oh, we miss the Lambs so much. And they said, well, let's start our own Lambs. And they did. Theaters were on 23rd Street, and I don't know where they met then, but they did build their own building on 44th Street between 6th and 7th. It's still there to this day, though we don't own it anymore, but it's still there. And it was very successful, you know, with a huge membership in those days. And it was before so many actors moved to Hollywood, you know.
Sure.
And it was just the old days at the old club were wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And your late husband led the club for a while.
The president of the club is called the Shepherd, and my husband was Shepherd for the last 11 years of his life. He was a very popular shepherd, and everybody loved him.
That's pretty cool. Now, I remember, Joyce, when I was watching Comic Relief. It was about 1990, and it was a few years after Jackie passed already, but they brought you, Audrey Meadows, Art Carney, on stage.
Yes.
And first time that you were really on stage together for maybe 30 years. Mm-hmm. I will tell you the ridiculous excitement I felt seeing all of you up there. That must have been surreal.
It was unbelievable. The three of us started crying. When you walk out on that stage and you see this whole audience get up and applaud, we started to cry. And Art says, oh, you think I was Marlon Brando. I said, you're better.
But you are,
it was quite a night. Oh.
But legends, you are legends. I mean, if you really look at like the top shows or early shows of television, you know, again, people talk about Lucy and Dick Van Dyke, but The Honeymooners is right there. I mean, that is one of the most iconic shows of the 20th century.
Yeah, we were right there with Lucille Ball. Yeah.
Well, the original 39 episodes of The Honeymooners turned 60 this month, and that's absolutely amazing. The complete Honeymooners series and lost episodes, as Joyce mentioned, are all available on DVD, and you can catch The Honeymooners locally and across the country on MeTV. Joyce, honestly, it has been an honor to have you on the program. You are a legend, big part of one of the most successful award-winning legendary series of all time, and I'm so glad you took the time for us tonight.
Well, it's been my pleasure.